23rd of February 2021. A few housekeeping things that I need to read out before we start. If I can remind all councillors to leave their cameras on throughout the meeting, and remind you that you're assuming at all times what you're saying and what you're doing is visible to the public in just the same way as it would be in the committee room. Can you ensure that your microphone is on mute unless you have been called to speak? And if you wish to speak, please raise your hand using the function on that. And only one person is speaking at a time. If at any point we bring somebody into the meeting and we're not sure, we'll ascertain who it is. If we can't do that, they will be excluded and unable to rejoin. The use of the chat function today will be discouraged. And should your remote participation fail, we will keep an eye on this, make sure that you re-establish and break if we need to. If you're referring to a particular page in a report or a slide, that will be useful so that we can all see what we're doing. And any member participating in the meeting who declares a disclosable pecuniary interest or other declarable interest in any item of business that would normally require them to leave the room will also leave the remote meeting. This will be confirmed by Democratic Services, who will then invite the relevant member back into the meeting at the appropriate time. When we're voting, we'll be using a roll call of members in alphabetical order, and then please state whether you're for, against or abstaining. After this, we will then declare whether the motion has been carried or defeated. When confidential or exempt issues are under consideration at the relevant part of the meeting, Democratic Services will ensure that there are no members of the public in the remote attendance or remotely accessing the meeting, so they'll be unable to hear the proceedings once this exclusion has been agreed. At the end of the meeting, we'll close and all members will be asked to hang up promptly. Right, so if I just introduce the people that we have here at the moment. My name is Councillor Vicky Gould, I am the Chair. We have Councillor Chris Sylvester, who is Vice Chair. Our Head of Service is Sal Khan. Our Planning Manager is Naomi Perry. Legal Representative, Sherry Grant. Our Democratic Services Officer is Monica Henchcliffe. And Planning Officers today, we have Kerry Chandler, Barbara Toy and Alan Harvey. In attendance, we have Councillors Ashcroft, Councillor Barker, Councillor Brady, Councillor Bilth, Councillor Faulkner, Councillor Hall, Councillor Lamb, Councillor Legg, Councillor McKiernan, Councillor Councillor Toon. Thank you. If we go on to agenda item one then, are there any apologies for absence?
Councillor McGarry.
Thank you. Item two, do we have any declarations of interest? No. So, item three, I will propose that we accept the minutes from the last meeting, which was held on the 19th of January. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Hall, thank you. And can we go to a name vote for this then, please, Monica?
Councillor Gould.
Four.
Councillor Ashcroft.
Four.
Councillor Barker.
Four.
Councillor Brady.
Four.
Councillor Bill.
Four.
Councillor Faulkner.
Four.
Councillor Hall.
Four.
Councillor Lamb.
Four.
Councillor Legg.
Four.
Councillor McKiernan.
Four.
Councillor Sylvester.
Four.
Councillor Toon.
Four.
Thank you, that's Gary Chair.
Thank you. Item four, any urgent business? I don't believe there is any.
No, Chairman.
Okay, so we'll move on to our planning applications then. So 5.1, we have P2020-01361. And if I can ask Kerry to present this to us, please.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, councillors. Bear with me while I share screen. So hopefully you should be able to see my slideshow?
Yeah, we can see that, thank you.
Brilliant, thank you. Okay, so item 5.1 this afternoon is application reference P/2020/01361, and that relates to the land to the south of Forest School Street, Rolston-on-Dove. The proposal is for the substitution of house types on various plots, 13 plots altogether, which are 29 and 30, 71 to 74, 76 and 78, and then 79 to 83. So just remind councillors of the key planning history for the site. In 2016, the outline approval was granted on appeal for up to 100 residential dwellings. Then that was followed by a reserved matters application in 2018, which came before planning committee, which was for the erection of the 100 dwellings, and that was the detailed application that showed us the landscape and the scale and the design of the houses and so on. And there have been several discharge conditions applications related to the above applications before, and works have commenced on site recently. So in terms of the site itself, we'll just point out the spatial part of it. We've got the settlement boundary, which is in red, for Rolston-on-Dove, as set out in the local plan, which skirts around the site. The wider site for 100 houses itself, which is the blue hashed area. We've got a walk, a public right of way, which sort of skirts along the bottom south southern part of the site as well. To the north and the east, we've got residential areas. And then the application site that we're looking at today, as I said, only relates to 13 of the originally approved 100 houses. And then 13 houses are within this black site boundary, as shown here. Just turning to the aerial picture, the site was formerly, the wider site, sorry, was formerly the College Field site. You've got the Forest School Street development here, which is a bit more of a modern development, and then you've got older houses which are formed of 20 lands along here, and then you've got Walford Road and Fairfield Avenue just to the eastern boundary here. Again, another view of the site, and this one just flags up where the conservation area is, which is referred to in the report. I'll just take you through some pictures. Now, the site works are underway, and several of the houses are obviously nearing completion there, and that's the show home in the foreground. So because the works have started on site, it can't go into the site and take some photographs like I normally would. So I'll just show you, we've got a view here from the entrance. This is off Forest School Street. And then a view here from Fairfield Avenue, which was located along the eastern boundary. Just to help remind members of the previous, in 2018, these are the photographs that were taken by the then case officer, which showed the site in a bit more of its context. It's quite a level site. You've got trees around the outside. That's Fairfield Avenue is there in the distance, with houses in Walford Road beyond over that way. These properties belong to Forest School Street, the newer development, which forms the main access to the site. And then this is again a view up Fairfield Avenue. This is in 2018. So turning to the application site that we're looking at, this is the wider development for the 100 houses. These are the houses here, which are currently under construction at this end. I think that's the show house there. And then our application site that we're looking at today is for 13 of the plots, is this area outlined in red here, and just to the south of the road that runs through the estate.
The overall layout of the state of the development remains exactly the same, and the plot sizes remain pretty similar to what was originally approved. The positioning of the houses remains extremely similar as well, as we'll see as we go through the presentation. So this is just a close-up of the application site. Now, 13 houses that we're proposing to substitute here, the four in the middle were two-storey, four-bed houses originally. So they are being substituted with another four-bed, two-storey house. And the cul-de-sac arrangement remained as previously approved. The houses around the outside, these nine houses here and to the south of the layout road, were formerly two-bed bungalows, and it's proposed to replace them or substitute them with a four-bed house. So we just look at the previously approved dwellings. So in the central area, plot 71 to 74, these are the houses that were originally approved in 2018. And then round the outside, these bungalows, two-bed bungalows, all formed the sort of inner circle of that aerial road that goes around the development. So in the central area, the approved houses here would be substituted for two-storey dwellings with two different designs there. That these here, plots 71, 72, 73 and 74. Now the bungalows, which were plots 29, 30, 76 and 78 to 83, were all originally approved in this design, and they will be replaced by these three housing types here. Just to look into these a little bit more, the layout, all three housing types would be M42 compliant, so they would be accessible and adaptable. So just that, this is just to flag up some questions that were asked this morning. I think Councillor Legg asked a question about plots 82 and 83. What happens to the parking round here? So this is plot 83 and plot 82, and the parking would be in between the houses. There's a distance there of 6.2 metres, which is the minimum requirement as set out in our parking staff, our separation distances and amenity SPD. The parking for 81 is to the side here. All of the plots that we're looking at today would have a detached garage, and the garage would include an electric vehicle charging point. So that's across all 13 properties. In terms of the garden sizes, which was also questioned this morning, the original layout of the estate is actually quite generous in terms of our policies. So if I just give you the example of plot 82 here, that plot 82 has a garden size of 109 square metres when our SPD, the separation distances and amenity SPD, states that a four-bed house should have a 70 square metre garden. So in terms of the garden sizes and the separation distances and so on, we're happy as officers that and a good level of residential amenity is maintained despite these houses becoming houses when they were previously bungalows. Like I've already said, they're all M42 compliant. Across the site, I think we've got 62 dwellings that are M42 compliant, which is quite good, quite a high number on our residential schemes. And that essentially means that they have sort of ground floor rooms that could be adapted or what have you. The building story height plan was also something that I believe was looked at the original planning committee in 2018, and all the orange plots along this side, they are all bungalows. These are all bungalows, and then the blue denotes the two-story houses. I think Councillor Barker raised this morning a question about the Rolston Neighbourhood Plan and its status. The Rolston Neighbourhood Plan went to a referendum. Oh, sorry, it didn't go to a referendum. It was examined and found to be sound and in compliance with our local plan policies. Now, the next stage is that we go to a referendum and local people get to vote whether or not to adopt, formally adopt the neighbourhood plan and make it formal policy. Unfortunately, COVID came and that referendum never happened. However, it's due to be held this year in May. The Town and Country Planning Act basically says that we have to give regard to the to a neighbourhood plan that's post-examination, so far as it is material to the application, so we do have to take it into account. And it is referred to in my report in the various categories. Given the stage that the neighbourhood plan has reached, we consider that they can be given significant weight in decision making. In terms of this application, the policies that we've looked at are H2, which is housing mix and affordable housing. H2 basically requires a balanced mix of house types to meet local needs. The housing mix should include a mix for first-time buyers, elderly, and those that wish to downsize. Affordable housing should be well integrated within the site. Policy D2, design of new development, basically sets design criteria to deliver good quality design using appropriate urban drainage, and materials are also given a strong emphasis. Policy D3 relates to the public realm and car parking, and basically wants layouts of new developments to encourage low vehicle speeds. The mix of parking should ensure that cars don't dominate the street scene, etc., and garages should be of a suitable size. Policy OS1 is views of importance, and that basically provides protection for views of local importance. And policy NE1 was the last policy that we considered to be relevant to this application, which relates to flood risk, because the mitigation of flooding should be an integral part of the design. We should have well-designed sustainable urban drainage and so on. There are other policies such as H1 for new housing development and NE2, which is a protection of the natural environment. However, they aren't considered specifically relevant to this proposal, given that the application site sits within a wider residential scheme. So that's just to highlight how we've looked at the Rolston Neighbourhood Plan there. So going back to what we're looking at today, the housing mix obviously changing, 13 houses are proposed to be substituted, 9 of them would go from two bed to four bed. So in terms of the housing mix, this column sets out what our housing choice SPD requires. This column sets out what we approved, and that's the percentages followed by the percentages. And then the following column sets out what we're looking at today, and then the percent, and then followed by the percentages. What I would say is that the original reserve matters did not strictly comply with the housing choice SPD. Now, the housing choice SPD came in, I think it came in just before this was approved, but it was brought in after the outline consent. So in terms of the original housing mix, it didn't strictly comply. What we consider today is that it still doesn't comply. Your five beds and your three beds remain exactly the same. The difference that we're evaluating is between the two beds and the four beds. We still have 19 bungalows proposed across the site, so you've still got 19 two-bed bungalows. But obviously that number has been reduced from the original 28. So in terms of the committee report and the evaluation of the scheme, in terms of consultations, Highways had no objections, largely because the actual layout of the estate doesn't change. The car parking is appropriate. We've got 3 spaces on each site to serve each 4 beds. One of them spaces is within a garage, which is of appropriate size, and there's a condition to make sure that the garages are retained as garages. The Flood Risk Authority have raised no objections, again, because there's no significant alterations to the drainage, to the layout of the site or the drainage layout. Seven Trent have raised no objections, but did want to see the drainage details before before works progress. So that's attached as condition four. Environmental Health have raised no objections. No objections were raised by Rolston-on-Dove Parish Council, and no comments were received from the ward members. So in terms of the policies that we've assessed this application against, that's the National Plan and Policy Framework, the Local Plan, and the various SPDs, the Design Guide, Parking, Separation Distances and Amenity SPD, and also the Rolston Draft Neighbourhood Plan. In principle, the site has already got consent for residential development, and that's already been established through previous planning permissions. And the housing mix, it's considered, remains acceptable, and the provision of affordable houses remains unaffected. On the original scheme, there were seven affordable houses which are secured by the original Section 106. They remain unaffected by this proposal. The overall design of materials and landscaping is considered to be acceptable, reflecting the surroundings of the site and the originally approved scheme for the wider development. In terms of amenity, as we said before, there's sufficient space within the within the properties themselves and externally to make sure that there's no residential amenity concerns. The development raises no impacts in terms of highway safety. The County Highways Authority are happy, and garaging and parking is in line with our SPDs. We've also got the electric vehicle charging points, which would be provided on every all of the 13 houses that we're looking at today. In terms of the historic environment, the conservation area is located quite some distance away, and the nearest listed building is also over 570 metres away, so there's no impact, mainly due to the intervening built form. In terms of flood risk and drainage, the site lies within flood zone one. The lead local flood authority have raised no objections, and I think quite a lot of work was done on the original drainage scheme for the development, which remains the situation. That is what we would, what the site would still be, the original drainage scheme for the whole development would still be the same. This proposal does not affect that. Biodiversity, the scheme would not affect the biodiversity enhancement plan because all the enhancement was to be made around the outside of the site, and that included bat and bird roosting facilities and special planting to enhance biodiversity. So in conclusion, officers consider that the proposal complies with the local plan, the draft neighbourhood plan, the SPDs and the National Plan and Policy Framework. We've taken a positive approach to decision making and concluding that it's a sustainable form of development, which again complies with our policies. The recommendation today is to approve as per the conditions set out in the report. Section 106, which is mentioned in the executive summary of the report, that's an error, and that's been raised with members through the update sheet today. So I can confirm that Section 106 is not required in this case. And that concludes my presentation today.
Thank you for that, Kerry. We'll go on to the public speaking part of this now, and if I can call on Mr. Toby Hunt first, please. Mr. Hunt, can you hear me? Can you hear me, Mr. Hunt?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, thank you. Are you aware of our speaking policy?
I have 3 minutes, I think.
You have 3 minutes, yeah. We have a timer on our screen, so I will remind you when we're close to the end. Ready when you are.
Right. Thank you. I'm speaking against the proposed amendments on three counts. The ESBC local plan projects that by 2031, single and couple households aged 65 plus will increase by 65%. Indeed, over 90% of the growth in household numbers will be of single and couple households. It identifies that for a strategic village like Rolleston, the housing mix on new development should be 35% for the elderly, and a further 28% should be one and two bedroom houses. Housing for the elderly should be specifically designed with older people wanting to downsize in mind. Bellway's 2018 planning statement noted that it met with these requirements. The proposed amendment will mean 55% of the buildings are now four or five bedroom houses. It is difficult to see how replacing two-bedroom bungalows with four-bedroom houses will allow older people to downsize. Where will the required housing for elderly and first-time buyers come from? In terms of the design, I refer to the Bellway Planning Statement of 2018, which stated that 28 bungalows have been provided to respond to the topography of the site. The current proposal is to now ignore this and build two-storey properties on the highest point on the land. Whilst bungalows would have been level with the roof lines of the neighbouring properties, the amendment will mean that plots 80 and 81 will now tower over the surrounding housing, dominating the eye line from Walford Road and along Fairfield Avenue, completely changing the character of the area. And finally, the Bellway planning statement supporting this amendment indicates that bungalow house types have very low market attraction. And yet in the last 6 months, two bungalows sold in a matter of weeks on Walford Road. And if you make any inquiries in Bellway about the bungalows on the development, no prices are available, no brochures or illustrations have been produced, and none of the bungalows have been offered for sale, so it's hardly surprising that they have seen little interest being expressed. It also states that at their 2018 meeting with residents and the parish council, no attention was drawn to the bungalows. As someone who battled the flood to attend that meeting, I can confirm that Bellway made very specific reference to the bungalows, and as residents we took great comfort from the sympathetic approach to the topography of the land. In summary then, I oppose the amendments on the grounds that they do not conform with the local plan. The amendment completely changes the design and integration of the development to the wider area, and that the planning statement is potentially misleading or inaccurate in its assessment of the demand for bungalows or the suitability of replacing two-bedroom bungalows with four-bedroom, two-storey houses. Finally, I would ask that if the amendments are approved, then the trees included on the soft landscaping proposal at the front of plot 81 and adjacent to plots 44 and 45 are subject to tree preservation orders in recognition of their essential inclusion in the development to screen the proposed two-storey buildings, and that additional tree screening is considered at the front of plot 43 to replace the removed hedge, as was suggested by the chair at the planning meeting in 2018. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hunt, for that. Right, if I can move on to our next speaker, Mr. Chris O'Hanlon, please. Hi, Mr. O'Hanlon, can you hear me?
Hello, Chair. Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yes. 3 minutes when you're ready then, please.
Thank you. Chair, members of the Planning Committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of this application. My name is Chris O'Hanlon and I am the Planning Manager for Bellway Homes West Midlands, who are the applicants for this scheme. The application before you this afternoon is for a substitution of house types for 13 approved dwellings within this scheme located in Rolleston-on-Dove. The replan maintains the overall number of dwellings on site at 100 as approved under the Outline Planning Commission. The application proposes the replacement of some of the approved bungalows with two-storey houses and has been submitted in response to a rising demand for those wanting a home that can be adapted to suit their needs throughout their whole life. The proposals retain the approved bungalows along the eastern boundary where the site borders with existing properties on Walford Road and Fairfield Avenue, respecting the existing topography of the site. The house types proposed as part of this application have been designed to the new M42 standard from the ground up in order to ensure that they are accessible and adaptable. As pointed out in your officer's report, all of the dwellings that are proposed as part of this application are M42 compliant, and therefore the provision of over 60% of these types of dwellings is maintained across the wider sites. The proposals would alter the housing mix, but this has been confirmed as being acceptable by the council's housing officer in light of current planning policies, local housing needs set out in the Rolleston and Dove draft neighbourhood plan, and the objectives of the housing choice supplementary planning document. Both the design and placement of the proposed dwellings are consistent with dwellings already approved on the wider scheme and accord with the design principles set out in the outline planning permission. The provision of affordable homes is unchanged and therefore would be maintained across the wider site in accordance with the provisions of the original Section 106 agreement. There are no objections from any statutory consultees, including the Parish Council. Taking the above into consideration, I would respectfully request that the committee members follow the recommendation of the planning officer and resolve to grant planning permission subject to the conditions set out in the officer's report. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Mr. O'Hanlon. Right, if we go to our committee time then, please. So if I can ask any of our members if they've got any comments or questions at this time. Councillor Faulkner, you have your hand up.
Thank you very much, Chair. Even before Toby Hunt actually raised his objections, I had serious concerns about policy H2. In there it sets out the housing development should provide a balanced mix of house types to meet local need. Specifically, the mix should include smaller dwellings to meet the needs of first-time buyers, the elderly and those wishing to downsize. When we look at the original application, it included 37 two-bed homes and homes for older people, including 28 bungalows. That was 37% of the scheme compared to the 61% that the Housing Choice SPD agreed in the local in the neighbourhood plan. So it's already 24% light on that. And now we're actually reducing that to 19 bungalows and only 28 two-bed homes for older people. So in other words, we're moving away from our Housing Choice SPD of 61% to 28%. I see our developments as a shopping area for our residents and prospective residents to come and live in the area or remain in the area. And what we're offering is not what the people of Rolleston have voted for. And I cannot see any reason why we're actually saying the proposal would not significantly deviate from the approved housing mix. I'm sorry, I do see it as a significant deviation. And unless somebody can actually convince me otherwise, I will not be in support of this application. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Faulkner. Would you like to come back on that, Kerry?
Yeah, I think in terms of my report, I set out there is a deviation, and in the presentation that I've just provided. In terms of we have to give weight to what we are getting on the site. Although the proposed 9 replacement dwellings are not two bed bungalows, they're not single story. They are adaptable houses as well. So it's not just the case that homes for older people should always be just single story bungalows. They do have, these houses are capable of being adapted to provide downstairs bedrooms and so on. So that's what we've also taken into account.
Sorry, Chair, but there is a reduction from 37 to 28. Not just the fact that we're changing bungalows to two beds, there is a total reduction of these types of houses. I do object to them changing the bungalows, and I do object even more to actually changing our 37% down to 28% when the SPD calls for 61%.
Thank you for that. I have Councillor Barker next, please.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to echo Councillor Faulkner's frustration, really. At the first stage, we were pushing the boundaries to go for only 37% instead of 61% of that size of house. To then reduce it even further has pushed our boundaries even further. And I have a feeling that the officers have brought this to us because they've realised that those boundaries have been probably pushed too far. And it's up to us to either verify that or say, no, it is too far, let's go back to where we should be. Because what is the point of us having a housing SPD if we virtually throw it out the window like this because it's less than half of the ones that we said we were going to have? So I joined Councillor Faulkner in being frustrated, and I'm going to struggle to support this. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Barker. Any further points to make on that, Kerry?
No, in terms of the reason why it's before you today is because it makes an alteration to a scheme which was previously granted planning permission by planning committee. It is a departure from what was approved, and that's the reason why it's here today before you.
Could I just add as well, Chair, just to say as well, Kerry, is that obviously your recommendation is in support of the application, is in support of the approval, isn't it? So I think you should just reiterate that maybe the planning reasons why you don't think that there's a that obviously you're supporting that we can support the amendments that have been put forward on the substitution of these house types.
Yeah, so in terms of the existing consent is a material planning condition the existing planning permission is a material consideration that we do have to give way to. So that did include, yes, it did include a departure from the housing choice SPD, or as it is now. But I think we also have to take into account what is being proposed, and these aren't dwellings. These aren't just four bedroom dwellings that could not cater for older people. These properties could cater for older people. So we have to give that some consideration as well. And in terms of it's officers consider that we would not be able to sustain an appeal on the grounds of what's been submitted.
Thank you for that. I have Councillor Toon next, please. If you could unmute Councillor Toon, please.
Yeah, I agree with Councillor Faulkner and Councillor Barker's comments, but I'm also quite concerned that you've picked the bungalows on the highest point and are now putting four-bedroom houses there. When we first agreed this plan, the bungalows were put there for a purpose, to keep it low, and now you're going to have higher buildings there. So I object to that as well.
Thank you. Kerry, would you like to come back in?
Yeah, so it is acknowledged that the building story height plan, which obviously formed part of the original consent as well, that has altered. However, that's within the site and it's still considered, you've still got the bungalows around the outer sort of perimeter of the site and towards that end, which goes with the sort of level of the land. The houses will be more visible from sort of Fairfield Avenue, Walford Road end, but we have to take into account the visual amenity of the whole in the wider context. The houses are going to be visible, and it's not considered that we could sustain a reason for refusal on these grounds, particularly as the bungalows, we're still having bungalows on the edge of the site.
Thank you, Kerry. I've got Councillor Legg next, please.
Thank you. Two questions, please, Chair. First question is there anything we can do to make sure that the bungalows they are putting on there do actually get built and they don't come back with another planning application to ask for changes to them, please, is my first question. My second question was when I asked this morning about plot number 43 and the screening, and also Mr. Hunt mentioned this when he spoke to us I'd like to make sure that we do have screening on plot 43, please.
Thank you. Kerry?
Okay, so in terms of plot 43, that is actually outside of the application site, so that is still subject to the original conditions that the plans that were approved as part of the wider site. We can't do anything, we can't change any of the landscaping or what have you, which is outside of the red line that we're looking at today, which kind of sits in the middle of the wider site. In terms of the question about the further changes to the bungalows, they would require planning permission and we would have to assess them on their individual merits. They would come back, as this application has, would come back before you, but I'd suggest that any further sort of reduction in the two beds is not really going to be acceptable. You know, we do have a housing mix, and we do, at the moment we're balancing these the overall proposed housing mix, and we consider that to be acceptable. But if you start changing that again, then we would need to reassess that, and obviously that would form part of the planning application.
All right, thank you. And can I ask that we now are having these taller houses that can be fitted with swift bricks, please? Because we couldn't get them on the bungalows, now you're changing them to houses. Could we look at swift bricks, please?
Could be an informative, Councillor Gordon, Councillor Legg, if that's what you're proposing.
Yeah. Thank you. Any further comment, Kerry?
No, I think the developers could put swift bricks into the two-storey houses. I think that's a fair comment.
Thank you.
Hall
next, please.
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I'm more than happy to second Councillor Legg's proposal that there's an informative added for swift brick on the two-storey substitute buildings, should we approve this application today. I'm just trying to bottom out this issue about what's in the Housing Choice SPD and how this application conflicts with it. Obviously, you've come back to it a couple of times, Kerry, and reiterated the significance of these proposed houses being of M42 standard, which I think is quite an important thing for us to consider, because it does mean that all of those houses are adaptable, all of those homes are adaptable. I think if it weren't for that, we would be having it would be a much easier decision for me today to say, well, this isn't acceptable. But because of that, I think it makes me think much harder about it. And more sympathetically towards the proposal is what I'm saying. Just going to the Housing Choice SPD, at what stage were the figures in the SPD proposed? Are these just figures for Rolleston? Are they for all strategic villages, or is it something that's specifically for Rolleston to have those higher numbers of two-bedroom homes? Just talk me through that if you would, because I think if it's something that is specific to the village of Rolleston, we need to think about it more carefully. But if it's a more generic figure, then I can understand why you're giving it not as much weight as perhaps some of us as members would like you to.
Okay, I've got Naomi Perry would like to come in on this.
Yeah, sure. I hope I can talk through the SPD. So we've had a Housing Choice SPD in place for a number of years, which has been revised a few times. I think it was revised quite substantially once the local plan was adopted. So we have got an issue of timing here. We have applications that are permitted and outlined before the SPD was adopted. We have applications that have been permitted after the SPD was adopted. So we have got that to consider, whether there were any conditions on the outline application which stipulated that future reserve matters have to be in accordance with the SPD. So that's a key factor for officers to determine when they get applications like this before them. So in this instance, there wasn't a condition on the outline to say reserve matters, you know, must follow the SPD. So in a way, that's the starting point, really. There's nothing that said the reserve matters have to stick to it exactly. In terms of the SPD, it does set out kind of a proportion of types of housing for each area in East Staffordshire, and it groups certain settlements, such as Rolleston, together, Tier 1 settlements. So the figures that are quoted, they are for Rolleston, but they're roughly, you know, quite similar across the borough. And we do specify in there housing for the elderly, which is normally seen as smaller properties. We haven't got a definition nationally for housing for older people, but we would normally consider it smaller properties. However, dealing with applications over the years, we do have applicants that say, actually, it's the adaptability part that's quite important. If people want to stay in their home for a considerable time, they want extra rooms so grandchildren can come and stay, things like that. So we consider in this instance that the M42 compliance is a benefit of this proposal, and Kerry's obviously given that considerable weight in her weighing up of the merits of the application.
Thank you, Naomi. Now, that brings me to policy H2 in the neighbourhood plan. I guess the wording of it is critical in this, isn't it? Because it welcomes housing for older people, but it doesn't necessarily, it says that there should be houses for older people, but that doesn't set a quantum, does it? So it's saying that houses for older people are welcome and that there should be some within any proposal.
Yeah, if I just jump in there, it says the housing mix should include, and it specifies that properties for first time buyers, elderly, and private. It doesn't say you have to have so many, it doesn't say you have to have an X amount. It says that your overall mix should include that, which we consider that it does include those provisions.
Thank you.
Thank you all for that. Councillor Barker, would you like to come in again?
Yes, thank you. But it does say balanced, and three times more four-bedroom houses than our SPD and less than half of the two-bedroom houses of our SPD is totally out of balance. I'm sorry, I just cannot... I just think we're pushing the boundaries too far. And that's all I haven't been convinced otherwise yet. And all right, so yes, it is compliant, but an old person has then got to have twice the size of house that they need as opposed to having the bungalow. It's just wrong.
Thank you. Any further points that people would like to make at this moment? No? Well, we have got an informative that's been put forward and seconded, should we approve this. If we can go for a vote on the informative to be added, and if we can leave the wording to our officer, but that's to have the swift bricks put into a two-storey change of dwelling, that would be lovely, thank you. So if we can run with a name vote on that then, please, Monica.
Councillor Gould.
Four.
Councillor Ashcroft.
Four.
Councillor Barker.
Four.
Councillor Brady.
Four.
Councillor Bill.
Four.
Councillor Faulkner.
Four.
Councillor Hall.
Four.
Councillor Lamb.
Four.
Councillor Legg.
Four.
Councillor McKernan.
Four.
Councillor Sylvester.
Four.
Councillor Toon.
Four.
That's carried, Chairman.
Thank you. So if we've got no comments to make on this at the moment, if I propose that we follow the officer's recommendations, then can I have a seconder, please? Councillor Hall. And if we can go to a name vote now that we have a proposal and the seconder as well.
Okay. Councillor Gould.
Four.
Councillor Ashcroft.
Four.
Councillor Barker.
Against.
Councillor Brady.
Four.
Councillor Bill.
Four.
Councillor Faulkner.
Against.
Councillor Hall.
Four.
Councillor Lamb.
Four.
Councillor Legge.
Four.
Councillor McKernan.
Against.
Councillor Sylvester.
Four.
Councillor Toon.
Against.
That's Gary, Chairman.
Thank you for that. Thank you for the presentation, Kerry. And we'll move on to our next item on the agenda. Agenda item 5.2 has been withdrawn at this time, so I'll move on to item 5.3. That is P2020-00649. And if I can ask Alan to present when he's ready, please.
Okay, can I just check you can see the full screen there?
Yeah, we can see that.
Okay. Okay, Chair. This is an application at the Cock Inn, Hanbury Hill at Hanbury. It's an application for the retention of land in use as a camping field, along with a toilet and shower block. Just to point out, the camping field includes a five-plot caravan as part of that application. So, the application site lies immediately to the north of the Cock Inn public house, to which it's going to be associated, and indeed the tenants are the applicants on this application, and is located on the eastern side of Hanbury Hill. But just get my pointer up, I shall take you through the topography of the area, which is okay. Because obviously we're seeing quite a flat photo from the air. Right, so the application site is in black in the centre of the slide. In terms of topography, the land falls to the north, down towards the road that goes between, I call it Draycott and Tutbury, or the Tutbury Road we'll refer to it as. It also falls to the east, and that's down towards the Fall Crater, which many people will be familiar with. There's also a public footpath, and that crosses the application site, so that's the footpath in blue. The footpath that actually to the south there is actually the one that's easier access to the Fall Crater, and there's actually a signboard in the bottom corner there, actually in the village itself. So the application site. So, in terms of the, it's located on the eastern periphery then of the village, and there are agricultural lands to the north and to the east, and obviously to the south as well, surrounding it, with the main part of the village opposite on the western side. The application site itself originally came in to go as far as the frontage of the road, but was set back as part of the application process. And it is now 25 to 37 metres away from that back edge of the public right of way, the public footpath, sorry, say the public highway. So if I take members through a series of slides. So this is coming up the hill from the Tutbury Road. On the left-hand side there, you've got the Cock Inn public house. The application site sits also on that side behind the hedgerow. And as I say, 25 to 37 metres back. On the right-hand side of the slide, you've got the residential properties that face over towards the application site. Effectively, we're going through a tour now as if we're walking round. So we've walked up the road, and we're now walking into the public house car park. And there's the application site, which will be accessed via the gate, which is marked there with the arrow. the application itself is the field area, so we're looking over there. So we're stood now at the gate and looking over the southern part of the application site. So if you're over to the east, where the trees are, and you've got the hedgerow, that's the boundary of the application site in that direction. So again, as I say, the land falls beyond the application site in that direction. So therefore, on the actual part, this part of the site, it's a relatively flat plateau area. This is now going into the application site itself and looking back towards the back elevation of the public house, and the proposed toilet and shower blocks will be sited in that corner there. This is now again looking back across towards the fold direction with the trees again for reference in terms of the background, and you've got the back, you've got the public house there on your right hand side. Now with the public house behind us here looking north, so you can see here where the land starts to fall away on the application site, and that falls away downhill towards the road, towards the Tutbury Road. And now we're still on the application site itself, looking back. So we're now looking back towards the main part of the village. So you've got the water tower there. You've got the residential properties that directly face across to the application site, all the way down to the property there, beyond which then you're in open countryside. So the application site itself, to just set out the layout. So in terms of the photographs that I've just walked us through, we've come up the road there, looked across, and then that's where the public house is and the application site. There's a hedgerow along the road frontage. You've got the dwellings on the western side there, facing across to the application site. The application site boundary itself runs there. In terms of getting into the application site, you're going through the public house car park, the cock in there, through the access gate, and then into the open field area. So you've got the plateau area that runs to about there, and then the land starts to fall as it goes down the hill. In terms of the toilet and the shower block, you've got a pretty standard portable unit that's been proposed to be clad in timber to be more in keeping or to soften its appearance in the locality. Right, in terms of the actual organisation of the business itself, the applications would propose the siting of the 5 caravan pitches, which I showed, and then up to 20, and the applicants call it family tent pitches. So the site will actually be accessed through the car park, and there actually be a no parking zone area, which the County Council have asked for in front of the access gate. Within the field area, it is proposed that visitors' cars be parked there on matting to be laid in inclement weather. It's also proposed that the footpath that crosses the site will be fenced off to prevent it being blocked. The application site as well, applicants have proposed a management plan, which is set out in the committee report in full. But in brief, it's for the campers not to arrive before 9 a.m. and not later than 8 p.m. The site gates would be locked between 10 p.m. and 8 a.m, although there will be emergency access available and a contact detail for that. There will be a 10 p.m. curfew. Each pitch can only be occupied by the same party for 14 days in any calendar month. Visitors to the site will be able to access and use the public house for food and drinks, and there'll be an emergency telephone number at all times for campers. Now, when we come to the actual officer recommendation, you'll find that the management plan itself is tied into a proposed condition, and many of those times in specifically are subject to conditions themselves. There was also an issue raised in mid-December by a local residents about a parking of a camper van on the public house car park itself, and that was found to be just the applicant's friend, who was a family friend who was attending an employment course locally. That was moved within 4 or 5 days of it being there, and no such incidents have been reported since. So in terms of the actual planning merits of the case and the consultation responses, as set out on the slide above, the county highways, the environmental health people, in particular, have been part of the interrogation of the whole application, which has been out for free consultations with the parish council and local residents. And they've got no objections, subject to conditions. The public rights of way officer, again, no objections, subject to the protection of the right of way. And same with the Ramblers and the Open Space Society. Severn Trent Water have got no objections, effectively, to the connections to the public mains. And then the architectural liaison officer from the police has no objections too. Now, in terms of the locality, it's fair to say there's been objections to the scheme. The parish council have raised objections on all three occasions that they've been consulted on that process. The particular concerns, which are some replicated by the residents themselves, are about the traffic volumes on narrow country roads, particularly the Hanborough Hill. The campsite proposed is completely inappropriate for a village of 400 residents with no services. Antisocial behaviour is likely, and that will include noise levels, although there's also been concerns raised about things such as urinating in bushes, etc. Access across the pub car park will be problematic, both in terms of conflict with existing patrons using the car park, the potential to block the access gate. There's the proximity to dwellings and the potential loss of privacy for the people concerned. The legacy of future generations of changing agricultural land to a permanent campsite. And then also the point that's been made, and also made by local residents, is this concern that other than attending one parish meeting, the applicants have not actively engaged with local residents. The application was called to committee by the local member, who also raised his concerns, and I understand he attended the first parish meeting and was aware as a consequence of the local opposition to it. In terms of the residents themselves, so in the sense that it's a repeat of some of the points that have been made by the parish council, I'd also like to point out at this moment in time that there's an update sheet that members need to refer to, because that also raises additional concerns that have come in subsequent to the publication of the report. But in essence, and there are numerous other objections, so these are the key ones, and they're all listed on pages 11 to 13 of my report. But residents are saying the village lacks facilities, including bus links. The scheme would be detrimental to the visual amenities of the village and the wider locality, detrimental to highway safety with the narrow roads, inadequate capacities, conflict with pedestrians, cyclists and horse riders. Noise and disturbance would be an issue, particularly at unsociable hours. The loss of privacy to nearby properties. Inadequacy of car parking facilities with potential for mud on the road. Negative impacts on views from the public house and customers dining there, for example, as well as the dwellings across the road, could lead to the blocking of the public footpath route. Inadequate drainage, electricity and waste facilities. Lack of consultation with villagers. The applicants not comply with their management plan in any case. Campers will use the land nearer dwellings outside the site. It's also considered that the proposal, as set out in the update sheet, would be disrespectful to the nearby Pole Crater explosion site and the fact that people lost their lives there, and that there are better ways for the applicants to generate income. Now, the update sheet itself actually addresses quite a lot of these points, and I'm going to repeat that to some extent as I go through the rest of the presentation. Of course, using the relevant policies, national and local, in terms of the MPPF, the MPPG, our local planner design guide and the parking SPD. So, I think the word balance is something that members hear very often when we present application cases. And this is absolutely true of this application. So on one hand, you've got a business proposing to effectively expand its operations or generate additional income in a rural locality, and balance against that, obviously we've got the issue of the impact on the visual and local amenities of residents. So going through the individual aspects of the scheme, the proposed development would not in itself meet the standalone requirements of the tourism policy in terms of sustainable location, and that's policy SP15. We've got a number of other similar sort of applications in areas, and as it's been pointed out, Hanbury doesn't have any local facilities other than the public house, and there's no public bus service there, with the bus service nearest one being along the main road between Draycote and Marchington. However, having regard to the MPPF in terms of businesses in the countryside and our particular local plan policies themselves, so that's SP8 and SB14, it's also considered that given that it's supporting an existing business in the countryside, that providing any planning permission will be tied to that business itself, that the scheme would be acceptable in overall principle. In terms of visual amenities, the development by its very nature will obviously have an ebb and flow of amount of visual impact with the temporary sited tents and caravans. However, it's considered, given that there is a degree of screening and it's next to the public house in something that you would reasonably expect in some sort of rural areas, and that the toilet and the shower blocks, by reason of their scale and position, it's considered that in overall terms it wouldn't have a sufficiently detrimental impact to the visual amenities of the locality to warrant a refusal. It is recognised that there'll be views from the residential properties on the opposite side of the road. However, a right to a view in itself is not a planning merit of reasonable refusal. In terms of residential amenities, this has been looked at, and during the part of the application process, as I've already explained to members, the applicants have already set back the boundary of the application site, so midway in the actual field area itself, to move direct visibility between properties and any tents or caravans. So in terms of distances, the minimum distance a front elevation of any dwelling could be, in terms of looking out on a tent, would be 37 metres, and the caravans would be 72 metres, which obviously, if you were comparing it to something like our residential guidance in terms of distances, would be far in excess of what's the minimum. It's considered also that given the adherence with the management plan, which will be tied by condition, and the hours of operation, which are going to similarly be tied by condition, that the proposed use would not have sufficient detrimental impact on nearby residents through noise and disturbance to warrant a refusal of planning permission. And again, that's very much been guided by in-house discussions with the environmental health team, who also point out that the site will require a license as well. The proposed shower blocks and toilet blocks are such an insignificant size in themselves that they'll have no material physical impact. Again, a lot of work has been done during the application process, but and the highways have been asked to interrogate the proposal, obviously having due regard to the concerns of local residents. But the highway authority have resolved that they believe the development raises insufficient adverse highway safety concerns on the surrounding road network, and in terms of access and car parking arrangements, it's acceptable subject to conditions. I think as part of this, what the highways are very mindful about is, in terms of the actual level of usage, you've got 5 caravans maximum on the site at any one particular time, and 20 tents. So in terms of comings and goings, it's not there. What they're basically saying is that they're not concerned about the level of overall additional traffic on the local highway. In terms of the public right of way, it's considered that no detrimental impacts to users will arise, provided the fencing will be put in place, and again, that's to be secured by condition. In terms of the historic environment, there's no material direct impact, given it's not engaged in this instance, given there's no intervisibility with listed buildings and no conservation area in Hanbury. Also, in terms of the point that's been made about the concern about the disrespect to the fall crater, again, that the scheme itself doesn't actually have any particular physical impact on the wider landscape, and it's considered that there'll be no material, for example, archaeological impacts as a consequence of the development. There are no flood risk implications, and the drainage provision is considered to be commensurate to serve the development, given that the Severn Trent Water raised no objections. In terms of biodiversity, it's considered there will be no significant long-term impacts. So, bringing everything to a close in terms of the conclusions, as I hope I've set out, there's not been a closure or a hat put in plans over the years in terms of listening to local residents. It's been very much part of this process, and both in terms of the amendments to the scheme, the securing of management plan and the recommended conditions, that these are all being brought together. As I say, having due regard to the fact that there's no objections from any other statutory consultees, to bring together a recommendation for an approval of planning permission. I probably with just the final point on that recommendation for approval, in essence, it's going to be all but a personal permission to the occupiers of the public house. It's for them, and it's for them only while they're operating the public house, and it can't be separated. And also, bearing in mind all the concerns that have been raised from local residents of the failure to adhere to any management plan, effectively, it's been offered up as a recommendation as a trial period for a year, and then it could be revisited if members are minded to grant approval on this occasion. So that's the officer recommendation on this case, is to grant planning permission subject to the conditions set out in the report. And they will also, as I say, include tying into the management plan things like fencing to the public footpath, to the site itself, to delineate the extent of where people are allowed to camp. And therefore, that's the recommendation to committee, approve subject to conditions.
Thank you for that, Alan. We'll now move on to the public speaking part. And the first speaker I have is a Mrs. Cathy Ager, please. If we can stop sharing the screen as well, please, Alan. Thank you. Major, can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you. You have 3 minutes when you're ready to start.
So my name is Cathy Bailey. I speak on behalf of many of the residents of Hanbury Hill. The objections we have is that the land is unsuitable as it's on a slope, and campers would naturally try to move towards the flatter area of the field, not included in the proposal. The field is very close to the central residential area of Hanbury, which itself comprises of approximately 400 residents, with 200 living centrally. The numbers of campers that may be camping at any time could easily be around 100. Currently, the residents near the Cock Inn are subject to noise disturbance from the pub garden, which is something we would have considered when we purchased the houses. However, the pub garden doesn't regularly have 100 people or so. With the potential increase of customers, the noise levels will be increased significantly. Children will use the field to play and run around from dawn to dusk, which will increase noise levels. And this already happened in the late summer when the applicant allowed a small number of campers to stay. And one of the applicants themselves expressed how surprised they were by the noise generated by the children. There's no other amenities within Hanbury, so the camping field is purely to attract people to the pub, and most likely alcohol will be consumed, which has potential for antisocial behaviour. The roads surrounding the Cock Inn are not suitable for caravans and increase in traffic. There's cyclists, walkers and horse riders who frequently use the lane. The entrance to the camping field means a number of spaces to the pub car park will be lost, which is likely to mean cars will park on the road and cause traffic hazards. The applicant has said in their response that the antisocial behaviour will be dealt with and they'll ask offenders to leave. However, most likely they will be under the influence of alcohol and not able to leave. The applicant says that someone will be on site at all times, but the lack of details on this arrangement doesn't fill him with confidence. And currently, the applicant's daughter and a friend live in the pub, but they both have full-time jobs elsewhere. There's no details provided on how the applicant will plumb in the unsightly shower block and toilet, which has been in sight since March last year. I believe that the campsite will have no benefit to Hanbury and its residents. Instead, it will further alienate the villagers from wanting to visit the local pub and any diners and restaurant looking out to the campsite rather than the countryside. We're disappointed with the lack of engagement from the applicant with the local residents, and despite the parishioners attending all the parish meetings to discuss the matter, the applicant has only joined one meeting. The lack of engagement and information throughout this process doesn't give us the confidence that this will be a well-run and well-managed campsite, especially should any issues arise. In conclusion, our belief is that the proposal for the campsite in a residential area and a sloping field is wholly inappropriate. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Sorry for your name being incorrect on my sheet, but thank you for your time, Mrs. Bailey. My second speaker I have is Mrs. Louisa Herrera, please. Good afternoon, Mrs. Herrera. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear. Thank you.
Okay, lovely. You will have 3 minutes when you're ready to start.
Cathy Bailey and I are speaking on behalf of concerned Hanbury residents who, like us, object to the proposal. We are yet to find anyone in the village who is in favour other than the applicants themselves, and having attended the parish council meetings, know the committee, of which at least five live in the village, are also very much against the plans. The principal planning officer has suggested imposing certain conditions. However, this provides no reassurance, as both the pub owner, Mr. Hall, and the applicants have an established history of disregarding and breaching planning permission, justifying concerns that any attached condition would not be met. Previous infringements have included extending the pub car park in 2014 without consent, a shed placed in the beer garden without consent where retrospective permission was later obtained. In December 2020, a camper van was provided with an electric hookup, enabling the occupant to park in the pub car park for multiple days. Various residents reported this on the ESBC website, highlighting not only a breach, but also that the area was in Tier 4 lockdown at the time. The fourth breach is the current application seeking permission for porta cabin toilet and shower blocks. Despite these being referred to as to be installed if permission is obtained, they have been in situ since March 2020. The wording on the application is clearly a misrepresentation, possibly a disingenuous one. We would therefore like to reiterate the following points. The proposed location is wholly unsuitable. Hanbury is a residential village in which the door to further commercial endeavour should not be opened. A large part of the field intended for the tents slopes substantially. Experienced campers have confirmed the slope is far too steep for comfortable camping, so we would urge the committee to visit the site to see this yourselves. The applicant's statement reads, as with the pub, any antisocial behaviour by anyone on the site will not be tolerated. Local residents' experience over the past few years is that there has been little evidence of the applicants attempting to moderate such behaviour. The applicants do not live at the pub, meaning they cannot proactively manage the campsite, and it will be down to local residents, as is the case now, to report unacceptable behaviour. As a residential community, we feel the proposal would have the most significant negative impact on the village than anything that has gone before it. In closing, there are no ways a campsite would make a positive contribution to the village. The applicants have stated it is needed for the survival of the pub. However, they are openly posting on social media how their takeaway food offerings are helping the business not only to survive, but to thrive. They do not need a campsite to make a success of the pub, just good food, good beer, good hospitality, and to stop alienating the local residents by continuing with the proposal for the campsite. Thank you.
Thank you for that. The last speaker I have on my list is Mrs. Jessica Harrison, please. Mrs. Harrison, can you hear me?
Hello, can you hear me? I've just come to talk basically. I'm part of the application. I also live at the pub, so I'm aware of noise levels, etc. I just wanted to mention, first of all, that all residents were spoken to prior to planning. There was no issues at the time, none were brought up, so it did come as a little bit of surprise.
we just wish that we'd spoken to about before, if they had any concerns. We understand the importance of maintaining the views. However, we also want to protect the views. We've got a restaurant on that side overlooking the hill. We don't want to block the views from the restaurant either. Also, just to mention about the planning on the car park in 2014, we didn't take over the pub till 2019, so unfortunately that was nothing to do with us. And the camper van that was parked at the end of the car park, that was someone who was taking part in the qualification at an MOT testing centre down the road. He used none of our facilities. He literally parked up. There was no noise from him or anything. So we didn't think it was of concern, as his hotel got cancelled, so thought he'd be fine just in his camper van. We're not too close to the Fall Crater. We're three fields and a woods away. So we are very rural, three sides of the campsite. There's no people around. We've got a management plan in place. This basically gives the time that we'll be open, and whether the toilet blocks, when they'll be used, how the area around it will be landscaped, so not to affect the views. If you look from the road, you can't actually see the toilet block and the shower block from the road or from the residents' houses. It is around the back of the pub. The pub will only be open in the normal opening hours. Any antisocial behaviour, people will be asked to leave. We've not had any reports of disturbances before. We don't intend to start having it. It literally is a field at the side of the pub. We just want to have a few campers in just to help boost our economy. Obviously, it's been a really tough year for us. We just want to make sure that the pub can stay open. We've been doing everything we can to try and stay open. We're also, if there becomes too much traffic, we plan to put extra parking through an access gate at the top of the field, as to not to block the road. And anyone that is booking will have to book in advance, and we'll direct them the best route to avoid them coming up Hanbury Hill, as we know that was an area of concern for residents as well. We're aware of the impact that a campsite will have on the village, hence the consideration of numbers and the location of pitches. And we've made sure not to detract from the views, as we appreciate them as much as anyone else. We are from Hanbury ourselves, and we do appreciate how quiet and nice it is. That's pretty much what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Harrison. Right, so I will open this up to our committee, and who would like to speak first? Sal Cullen, would you like to speak?
Yes, sorry to interrupt, Chair. I believe the ward member is wanting to speak on this as well.
Okay, I've not got him down on my list, but if he's there in the gallery, we can have him speak as well. Have we got Councillor Hudson there?
Should have.
Good afternoon, Councillor Hudson. Can you hear me?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Yeah, thank you for letting me speak. I will speak on behalf of the ward. Okay.
When you're ready.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Councillor Phil Hudson, representing Crown Ward and in particular Hanbury, talking about this planning application. I've called the matter in because I consider it to be a very important decision locally. There needs to be some thought here given regarding the balance of supporting a local business in this uncertain times. The owners of the Cock Inn have certainly worked very hard to maintain their business during the lockdown. However, we need to then look at the views of the local residents to consider noise, disturbance, pollution, antisocial behaviour and the lack of on-site supervision. There certainly will be a lot more pollution because there will be a lot more vehicular activity. This will obviously cause disturbance. I'm concerned about the lack of on-site supervision. I do a lot of outdoor work in the summer up in the Peak District, and I can tell you from experience that with lack of on-site supervision, you know, with warden controlled, you often get noise to 2 to 3 in the morning, you get open fires, distances between units is often compromised. So I would say that, you know, there needs to be a condition that it's controlled 24/7. I note that the highway, Staffordshire County Highways, have said they've got no concerns. Can I ask the committee to look at that with caution? Too many times recently have I been made aware that County Council have made no objections to highway matters. And then after the planning committee have listened to, you know, that and placed their decisions on that, it's come back and haunted us. And the County Council has absolved themselves of all blame, and then it's been left with the Planning Committee, who have acted in good faith on these. My concerns are, we'll be looking at possibly 25-foot double-axle caravans with 2.5-tonne 4x4s pulling them. Now, coming up Hanbury Hill, you know, if they're met by a tractor and trailer coming the other way, it could be damage to our grass verges. It obviously will cause some issues. Also, vehicles turning into the car park are going to have issues turning in with such a long vehicle going across the car park and through that gate. I noticed that they say that they want no access before 9 and not later than 8. A lot of well-established campsites have people leaving at 12 and then new campers or caravans stop coming in until 2. Then that makes sure that you haven't got traffic coming in and out that's going to interfere with our very narrow lanes. Some people have only tents and motorhomes access because of the type of vehicles that they are driving and towing. I would like it, if it is a temporary permission, to make sure that we don't forget this and then look at it constantly, reviewing it through the year. However, I don't know how many of the committee know the lanes there. I do quite a lot. Perhaps you might reserve your judgment today until you've been able to go out and actually have a ride around the lanes and see what's involved there. So I would support that we don't grant permission for this campsite. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Hudson. Right. So now we will open it up to the floor. And who would like to speak? Alan, would you like to come in on that?
Yeah, I'd just like to make one point, just as a point of clarification, and I did speak at length during the process, that it's not a willy-nilly, you know, objections from the County Highway Authority. If members want to turn to the highway assessment section of the planning report, I mean, they set out in some detail as to why they've looked at it in the round and why they consider it not to be, why they've come to their conclusions as no objections. I mean, I'm quite happy to read it all out, but there are a couple of paragraphs in there that it's not a case of just dismissing an application as no objections. They have interrogated at every point in time and have set out exactly as to why they believe it's no objections. Just wanted to make that little point.
Thank you for that, Alan. So if I open it up, and if we can go to Councillor Lamb first, please.
Well, clearly I can see the residents' concerns and the potential risks. I just wanted to question, in terms of this 1 year potential approval to allow this, to see how it operates, is that 1 year starting from, would it start from the council meeting today? Or would it be delayed until after lockdown's been released?
Any planning permission would be the year would run from the date of the planning permission, so that would be in either today or the next couple of days when it's issued.
Well, in effect, we'd be talking about a shorter period than a year in terms of evaluating it and seeing the impact of it.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that I suppose in terms of the caravanning camping, it's not going to really start, is it, for another month or so. So you effectively got to cover one season, aren't you, with your 1 year permission, even at this point in time.
Yeah, that was my question. Thanks.
Thank you. Any further points? Councillor Toon. You're on mute.
Sorry about that, I keep doing that. Also, thank you, Chair. Also, we must remember that we're only granting permission for 5 caravans, not 20 or 30, it's just 5. And the field's not that big, as I know, so there won't be hundreds and hundreds of people there, as far as I can see, because tents have to be a certain distance apart anyway. So I think, you know, As the man's trying to announce his business, I think we should give him a try.
Thank you for that, Councillor Tim. Councillor Hall.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Yeah, it's a little bit nerve-wracking, isn't it? Because it all boils down to that, to how this site's going to be managed. and whether there are people actually on site to see any issues arising and deal with them beforehand. I've been at a campsite where it says you can't make any noise after 9 o'clock, and 9:10, talking not much louder than I am now, and the site warden's come over and said, "Oi, it's after 9 o'clock. Shut up," effectively. And I thought, oh, they mean it. Yeah, it works. And we were the only ones on the campsite. Everybody else was still in the pub down the road. But so it shocked me a bit. But campsites can be managed like that, and they are. I doubt whether somebody who's already running the pub has got time to go out to the campsite at 10 o'clock and say, "Hang on a minute, your kids are still running around. It's time to go to bed." So it makes me a little bit nervous that it can actually be managed as stringently as the conditions are suggesting and the requirements of a management plan is suggesting. However, I think if it's just for a year, then they've got the opportunity to prove that they can do that, haven't they? And I think it's right, supporting a local business, existing local business, to give them the chance to do that. My concern then would be if after the season is done and things aren't what they're hoped, how is that assessed? What evidence would you have to say that the conditions aren't being complied with, or to say that there are highway issues, or to say that there are noise issues? How would it be enforceable to say, no, you can't continue with the permission? And at that point, presumably they'd have to remove the anything that's been put in associated with the campsite, so the fence and the plumbed in toilet and shower block, and any hard standing that they might have put in the gateway to get cars into the field, because that would be the next thing, won't it? How is that then enforceable, that those things would have to be removed and the field returns to what it was before the activity started?
Okay. Thank you, Councillor Hall. Anna, would you like to come back on that? If you'd like to unmute.
Right, okay. So I mean, quite a lot of that is actually covered by existing conditions, Councillor Hall, so I'll just take you through that. But in terms of overall, I mean, you're effectively granting the planning permission for 1 year. At the end of that 1 year, they don't have permission to use the site, so they've got to come back to it. So they've got to come back to the local planning authority and inevitably to planning committee, and we'll be sat here again. And what we'll be sat here with the knowledge if they've complied with the management plan, officers are content that those conditions, because they're based on the requirements in the environmental health department, that if they, as you rightly say, comply with those conditions, then they'll be coming back to you with being able to present a report saying, well, we've demonstrated that we've complied with the management plan. Because as you rightly say, from the planning perspective, we can only put those conditions in place. They necessarily have to comply with them, and obviously people have got different views on their ability to do that or not, and we're all sat here and none of us can take one side or the other. They've got a year to demonstrate, and obviously it's in their best interest to do so. In terms of the actual facilities on site, there are conditions that require, for example, that the toilet block be removed. So that would there's a period of 56 days upon cessation of the use of the land. So, I mean, in essence, like I've alluded to, is that they to some extent have got to do some investment in the site, because there's fencing, etc. So effectively, they run the risk with a temporary approval of, I mean, obviously the planning permission would be required to put fencing up anyway, as long as it's within up to 2 metres in height. So they could keep fencing, for example. But they've got to invest in infrastructure, so it's in their best interest to make sure the conditions comply. In terms of feedback, I mean, we all get feedback, won't we, from local residents, for example, if there's been all highways in terms of any incidents on the public highway, because they're all recorded. And the other thing, of course, is, again, reflected in the report, is if there are particular incidents of noise complaints, then Environmental Health have the ability to serve notices under the Environmental Health Act, and same with mud on the road with the county highways. So they're, you know, they're fully aware of those issues, and that will all form part of any application when if it comes back. You know, if they choose, they may choose not to apply for another use of it. You know, depends how it works out for them, I guess. But effectively, we're just granting a 1-year planning permission, and they'll have to come back and ask for another planning permission thereafter.
Thank you, Alan. Councillor Bills.
There we go. Okay, thank you, Chair. Yes, if only we could look in hindsight of 12 months with all our applications, life might be a lot easier. And I think this is an opportunity, really, to test the water. And I think the key to me is the fact that it's tied to the applicant. It's in the applicant's interest, really, to make it work. I can understand the residents' concerns. It's something new coming in. It's disrupting a small community. But I think it can work together. And when they say there's nothing to do around there, no amenities apart from the pub, well, perhaps people just want to come there, get some boots on and go for a walk. There's plenty of footpaths there. And I think that's the kind of people it might attract. So they can come back at night, have something to eat, a drink, and then retire to the tent or caravan. So I think with all the conditions in, and I don't think we can prejudge whether conditions can be adhered to or not, all we can do is put them in and do our best to see they're observed. But I think we've covered pretty well with the conditions. So I'd like to support the proposal for this application, subject to the conditions printed.
Thank you for that, Councillor Bill. So we have a proposer. Do we have a seconder for this? Councillor Ashcroft, thank you. So do we have any further comments that we wish to make at this point? No, and then we will go to the name vote then, please, Monica.
Councillor Gould.
Four.
Councillor Ashcroft.
Four.
Councillor Barker.
Four.
Councillor Brady.
Four.
Councillor Bill.
Four.
Councillor Faulkner.
Four.
Councillor Hall.
Four.
Councillor Lamb.
Four.
Councillor Legg.
Four.
Councillor McKernan.
Four.
Councillor Sylvester.
Four.
And Councillor Toon.
Four.
That's Gary, Chairman.
Thank you all for that. I'm going to suggest now we have a 5-minute break so that we can stretch our legs, refresh our drinks, and if we can make sure we're ready to start again around about 3:43. Thank you all. Thank you.